It's Maryland Morning on 88.1. I'm Sheila Cast. At least 10 Baltimore teenagers have been murdered this year. The trauma for their families ripples through their communities and into the larger city, which worries about what the summer will bring. Last week, 16-year-old Oscar Torres was fatally shot sitting in a Ford Fusion that was carjacked. Police say the same car killed 12-year-old Shaniza Taft the next day in East Baltimore. Oscar and Shaniza have become part of a sad role of victims of violence. Naji Thomas, 14. Michael Mayfield, 17. Taquane Fetter, 18. Rashard Sinclair, 18. Gregory Ware Jr., 18. Jowan Henry, 17. LaVar Crawford, 16. DeJuan Willis, 17. What is behind so much violence aimed at Baltimore's youth, or at least entangling them? What can be done to stop it? For some insights, we turn to the Baltimore City Youth Commission. We spoke with Kayana Johnson, vice chair of the commission, Deshaun Batson, who's vice chair for youth violence prevention, and Kelsey Johnson, PR manager. When I spoke to them yesterday, I began by asking if they have known any teens killed by gun violence. We hear first from Kelsey.
Michael from Emerson, one of the Baltimore Inner Harbor Project, that's what it's called.
Yes.
Inner Harbor Project, one of their members were recently killed. And he was a part of when we did the school visits with Stephanie Rawlings Blake. And he was one that helped introduce us and bring us and guide us into the room where we were going. So that one specifically recently just happened. So.
And how about you, Kayana? Do you know somebody who's actually been lost to violence?
I know a lot of people who have been lost to violence, not necessarily directly, but I guess sitting back from afar, you know, of course, people that I went to school with in elementary school or middle school.
Tell me what kind of effect it's had on you to hear about young people that you know who get caught up in this violence.
For me, it has definitely had a negative effect whenever I hear of someone, you know, who has been killed as a result of youth violence. You know, it's always heartbreaking. Just as Kelsey mentioned earlier, you know, the young kid who was involved with the Inner Harbor Project, he was doing so well, going to college. And to just see our young people who are successful and their lives taking so soon is just so heartbreaking. And it's something that we definitely have to find solutions to so that we can begin to, you know, help our young people to grow and to be successful and to continue on that path of success and not have their lives taking so soon.
Deshaun, who do you know who's been caught up in this?
Well, most recently, I actually lost two close former classmates that were killed within 3 days apart.
Oh my.
Due to violence in the city. One was actually shot innocently by one of his friends as he was walking home one night, and then another one was stabbed up multiple times as he was trying to defend his cousin on York Road, and it played a major part because we were... three peas in a pot. We went to school together. We ran all together. So we were close. So it played a major part.
So the three of you were really close.
Yes.
Peas in a pod. And you lost two of these friends?
Yeah.
Within months?
Within days. Within days. One was killed at Tuesday and the other one was killed at Friday.
How are you coping with that?
You know, after a while, you know, you get used to it. After, you know, it's something that comes general. You just get used to it. Now we hear it so much. That's taking place for your young people. I mean, so you just get used to it taking place. It was a grieving process for me, but then you get over it, though, after a while.
Is that part of the problem, that people are getting used to this?
I think so.
And
I think because we're becoming desensitized to it when it's becoming almost every day or every week occurrence, and it's like, oh, there's another one. You know, it's not becoming as heartbreaking. It's like, oh, there's another one, but it shouldn't be. It should be like, this is somebody's child. This is someone's life. And it's constantly happening and no result is, you know, it's some results. But the only, you know, negative effect is that these kids are just constantly seeing that their friends are being killed. And most of them are crying out for attention. And that's the only attention they know that they can get is from doing something wrong.
How would you describe how much violence there is in the city?
Too much. So for example, Instagram is a popular social media at this point. And as far as parents posting that they're fighting each other on Instagram as some sort of praise is ridiculous. They're thinking it's okay to post things like that, like, oh, I beat such and such up. Like, it's not okay. It's never okay. And you have children that see that, and it's a popular public social media. And
I heard that right. You're talking about parents posting this?
Parents. Mm-hmm.
And I definitely agree with Kelsey on the point that she just made. I think when we start to think about or talk about youth violence, we really have to go back to the root causes of, you know, what's causing our young people to engage in violent activity. And, you know, we can always stem it back to the home lives. You know, if you don't have a strong structure within the home, you know, parents supporting the young people, you know, putting down or setting morals and instilling in our young people respect. And I think that's the culture of our society today. Like, we lack respect. We lack compassion, because when you have people who can, you know, with previous incidents with our young people getting killed, you know, people just, you know, shooting our young people, the lack of compassion, we really need to get to a point where we are compassionate, where we respect one another. And I think we've lost that. You know, and just as Kelsey said, we really need to go back to a point where, you know, our parents are involved in our young people's lives. And that's really where it all begins.
And just to really piggyback on what Ken is saying, just within the last couple of weeks, I spoke to parents, and it seemed like we've always put the downfall on our young people. But it's really not our young people. It's the parents. If the parents would get out and start mentoring more and start putting their foot down and telling their young people what they're going to do and what they're not going to do, and if we stop wanting to be their friends and start being the parents that we were called to be and that we were told to be, then we wouldn't have to worry about the city making laws, but our young people running astray, because there will be parents who are willing to stand up and come back together and say, this is something that you're going to do, for something that you're not going to do. But until parents start holding that ground, our young people are going to still do what they want to do and still run ratchet in the city.
Yeah. And that's definitely true. And then also at the end of the day, you know, it takes the saying, it takes a village to raise a kid. That is definitely true, because it's not just the parents, it's not just the young people, but it's everyone. It's police officers, it's teachers, parents, everyone that, you know, really takes a part and plays a part or a role in our young people's lives in order to help them to be successful, to grow and to mature into, you know, effective members of society.
So how do we get from here to there, from where we are to what you think would work in terms of more parental involvement with their own kids?
I would say more parents asking questions, more parents just going outside of their house and in their community and asking, just simply asking their neighbor children, how are you doing and how's school and what are your plans for the future? Those questions don't get asked anymore. Neighbors don't even babysit each other's kids anymore. So that happened when I was young and in my neighborhood, and I don't see that anymore.
You all are really hard on parents, and I suspect if I had a parent here, they'd say, you know, there's a problem with having enough jobs, so we have enough income to take care of our families. There's a lot of problems that these young people aren't taking into account.
I'm a young parent, and as being a young parent, none of the kids actually come into this world. So at the end of the day, it's the parents' responsibility to do what needs to be done for these kids. And I understand it may seem like we're hard on parents, but you are supposed to be hard on parents, because at the end of the day, the parents are the ones that are supposed to run the household, not the child. So at the end of the day, until the parents start stepping up and standing their ground, we're going to constantly have youth violence in the city. We're going to constantly have our young people running around doing what they want to do. But until the parents stand their ground once again and do what they're supposed to do, we are not going to see a change. So that's why I'm hard on parents, because none of the kids that we have nowadays are asked to be brought into this world. We bring them in this world. So because we brought them into this world, it's our responsibility to provide for them.
Deshaun Batson, Kelsey Johnson, and Kayana Johnson, all members of the Baltimore City Youth Commission. This is Maryland Morning on 88.1. I'm Sheila Cass. Joining me now is Councilman Brandon Scott, who represents the 2nd District in Baltimore City. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you, ma'am. Always a pleasure.
And with us by phone is Daniel Webster, Deputy Director of the Johns Hopkins Center for the Prevention of Youth Violence. He also directs the Johns Hopkins Center for Gun Policy and Research. Welcome back.
Thanks very much.
Councilman Scott, let me start with you. On Monday, the Baltimore City Council approved the curfew bill you sponsored. Tell us briefly what you think is most important in that ordinance.
Well, what's most important about the ordinance is that this has never for me been about public safety. This is about old school common sense and changing what I think is an outdated law to making it have more common sense and fit the goals that we want our young people to do with their lives. So simply what this legislation does is it changes the time frame for the curfew. Those young people, 14 to 16, will have a 10 p.m. curfew during the school year, and they'll have 11 p.m. curfew on weekends and when school's not in session, and those 13 and under will have a 9 p.m. curfew. It also removes the criminal penalties from the existing legislation. As of today, right now, before the mayor signs the new bill, parents can go to jail for their kids being in violation of curfew. That was something that I thought was unnecessary, and we took that out. We also added into this legislation that parents can avoid the fine, which ranges from $30 to $500. Overwhelmingly, it's $30. They can avoid paying the fine if they complete a family strengthening training course or they complete community service, which is something that wasn't eligible for them before. But also, I think the more important thing about this curfew is that in the city of Baltimore, we've had a curfew since I was 10 years old. So I remember what the curfew center used to be.
You're how old now?
I am 30 now. So for 20 years, we've had one. I remember what it used to be, and I remember what it was. It simply was a place that the police just picked up kids and they dropped them in a place where people were there, fed them, and sent them back home. It has evolved in a place that has DSS, DJS, the school system involved. And now the mayor and her staff are trying to even expand that and have them throughout youth connection centers throughout the city where they're community partners, they're organizations where these kids and their families can be referred to the services that they need. Because the young people that come into the curfew center or youth connection center are not the ones that are out committing the violence, but they are the ones who come in and who haven't eaten, or they are the ones who are not being properly monitored by their parents, who are 2, 3, 4, 5 miles away from home at all hours of night. And there's something truly wrong with that, and this is just a tool for us to connect those young kids with the services that they need.
But let me make sure I understood the very first thing you told me, which is when you proposed this months ago, this you were not aiming this
at kids
perpetrating violence.
No one has ever heard the words come out of my mouth saying that this was about reducing youth violence. We have done a great job in reducing youth violence in the city of Baltimore through many different means: diversion, programming, and engagement with the parents and the family, intersecting. We have Operation Safe Streets. We now have Ceasefire in Baltimore. Those are the ways that we're trying to tackle youth violence, and that's how you tackle that issue. This is not about youth violence. It's never been about youth violence. It has been sensationalized by the opposition and folks in the media about youth violence, but the sponsor of the bill has never uttered the word that this is about reducing youth violence.
Daniel Webster, Councilman Scott just ticked through some different programs. What strategies have you seen that are effective in preventing youth violence?
In my own research in Baltimore, one strategy that's proven to be effective in reducing homicides and non-fatal shootings, principally involving youth, is the Safe Streets program. Just very briefly, for listeners who aren't familiar with it, Safe Streets is a public health approach that identifies and does outreach to the highest risk youth in some of the most troubled neighborhoods, troubled with violence. Perhaps among the most important things that the program does is they mediate conflicts between individuals and groups so that they don't get out of hand, and they provide alternative ways to resolving the conflicts. My research has shown that in the four areas that we looked at and studied, three out of the four sites had significant reductions in gun violence as a result of the program. Unfortunately, the program is only in place in two of our neighborhoods. In a full program model, there's sort of a scaled-down version in two other neighborhoods. I think that this program can be strengthened and improved both where it's at now, but perhaps more importantly is I think we should be thinking about ways to expand that type of effective program. There are also policing strategies, of course, that are important in reducing violence. We need to have an adequate focus to make it too risky for people to illegally carry and use firearms. Of course, when our police department has had a focus on that, we have tended to be able to lower rates of youth violence as well.
On WIPR, this is Maryland Morning. I'm Sheila Cass, speaking with Baltimore City Councilman Brandon Scott and Daniel Webster, director of the Johns Hopkins Center for Gun Policy and Research and deputy director for research of Johns Hopkins Center for the Prevention of Youth Violence. What would it take to scale up safe streets to more of the city?
Right. That's a great question. So obviously you need some more resources, and I haven't, you know, sort of done all the financial projections. You know, it does involve hiring staff to do this type of work. I also feel that the program could be expanded at least partly with more creative ways to bring in volunteers and community members to participate in some of the same types of activities that are geared towards making connections with the highest risk youth. So I think that there are ways to do this. Part of it involves resources, but part of it also involves ways to engage the broader community to participate in this, rather than to see this as just paid professionals coming in to do their work, just like, say, a police department is. And the police department will say similarly that this needs to be a community partnership. So whether we're talking on the law enforcement side or the prevention side, there needs to be strategies, effective strategies, to bring more of the community in essence, to have some ownership of this.
Councilman Scott is nodding his head vehemently. So what would you like to add to that?
Oh, I agree with him wholeheartedly, actually. Being someone who helped expand the Safe Streets to Park Heights, even though it's not my district, it's the neighborhood that I grew up in, and the actual workers in Safe Streets, I know all of them. We grew up together. And to see the impact, they can have a greater impact on those who are out in that neighborhood committing violence, even though I know them. We all grew up together. It has to be about community involvement, about different kinds of programs. This is why I support these programs, but also it's why I keep constantly saying, and I know I wrote an editorial in The Sun about where are the men. I think that a lot of the violence in our city is a long-term result of the lack of positive interaction that our young men have with positive men. We don't have a lot of men that are volunteering in schools. We have thousands and thousands of young boys in the city waiting for male mentors, and that's what we need them to do. And I think that the approach that Safe Streets has and the approach of folks that are going out and talking to those young men is a great approach.
The three youth commissioners we spoke with were quite tough on parents. I mean, they really, that was what they wanted to say, the parents are responsible. Do you agree with that?
I wholeheartedly agree. As someone, I actually used to help run the nighttime curfew center, but in my work and being out at night all the time and working with so many young people as I do through mentoring, coaching, one of the biggest issues that we have are kids who simply tell us that, you know, their parents aren't very good. You know, I was at the curfew center, and I had a five-year-old tell me he got caught on purpose because his mom didn't feed him that day or the day before.
Okay. If the onus is on parents, Daniel Webster, how does one get parents more involved?
I have to say that's one of the most challenging things I think people who work on this issue of youth violence prevention will all agree that parent involvement and engagement is high on the list of importance, but it's also one of the most difficult things to do. We have to start viewing this as a problem, not simply as a problem of youth, but it's a problem that stretches through our families and generations. And if we don't do things that help parents be better parents, then we won't do nearly as good job of protecting our youth.
We're out of time. I want to give you the last word,
yeah,
Councilman Scott, briefly.
I agree very wholeheartedly with that, and that's why I continuously say that the number one issue in our city as far as violence to me is the breakdown of the family and community structure, especially in our low-income African-American communities, and that we have to have a serious talk, both federally, at the state level, and locally, about spending more dollars on family strengthening and training programs, because that is where we're going to get the most bang for our buck, in my opinion.
We will pick up this conversation. I appreciate you both talking to us. Thank you.
Thank you.
City Councilman Brandon Scott represents the 2nd District in East Baltimore. Daniel Webster is director of the Johns Hopkins Center for Gun Policy Research and deputy director for research with Johns Hopkins Center for the Prevention of Youth Violence. We have more information on our website, wypr.org/Maryland Morning. I'm Sheila Cast. Stay with us on 88.1.